hear it described a lot as a great meritocracy, but it's not. Your entire career is going to be dictated by what you know how to do and who knows that you know how to do it. If you need to curl up into a ball and shudder and wail and collapse right now, go for it. That's a reasonable response. Don't feel shame.
All right, folks, welcome. This is Hong from Fun BMC. I'm super excited to have my friend Jonathan Basker here for episode 10. This is a big episode. Jonathan, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. How you been, my friend?
Well, it's an interesting time. I've been up and down like most people.
Yeah. Let me give people a little background on you, and then we can jump right into the personal, because I know some cool big things happening. So Jonathan, I've actually known you for a pretty long time, really long time.
Yeah.
Jonathan is essentially a talent VP people person. We worked, 15 years ago, back when you were at Gravity and I was starting my first recruiting gig.
Yeah.
So it's been 15 years of like hiring people.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh my God, that was so long ago.
it was a long time ago. But recently you were talent at Etsy. You're a VP of people at BetaWorks, VP of people at Handy, which is, I'm going to definitely ask you about that because Handy is a different type of company. And then launch Basker & Company, your own, I would say, coaching, recruiting, people, culture, operations? Is that accurate? I mean,
it's evolved over time. It was very heavy on recruiting at the beginning. I'd say these days it is much more focused on organizational design and development. Mm-hmm. And that can look like HR, and that can look more like, you know, more of a consultative approach and a lot more focus on leadership coaching.
How do you recommend, I got a couple kind of steps, right? So we'll go through them kind of one by one. How do you recommend somebody who's finding their first job right now? Like, imagine all these new grads that are supposed to be matriculating in the next few months. How do they find a job? Because I think that's actually really critical. If your first job, I remember my first job, I came out at a good time. And then just a few years later, people were coming out at a bad time. And the difference between your first job and someone who got a lower paying first job, it takes 10 years to make up the difference. So what advice or what recommendations do you have for someone who's a new grad, doesn't have any work experience, wants to get their resume in front of the right person?
Yeah. So first, my first blanket thought that I hope is helpful for people is a reminder that you don't have to worry about the entire economy. You just have to worry about you finding a job.
Yep.
And people do find jobs in down economies. There's not zero new jobs being created right now. Some sectors are in growth mode. Some companies are in growth mode in sectors that are shrinking. Mm-hmm. If you look at it in totality, it's going to be wildly overwhelming. The numbers are horrible. Like, you could doom and gloom this thing simply by presenting it neutrally.
Yeah. It looks pretty bad.
And that could really deflate you. And it wouldn't be unreasonable to feel deflated if that's what you're trying to bite off. Mm-hmm. So don't bite all that off. You need one job.
Right.
And your job for now is to go and find that job, to create that one job for yourself. Let go of the rest of it. If it's easier or harder, sure, you could spend time evaluating whether this is a better moment or a worse moment than your older sister had, or et cetera. But that's not really valuable to you. It's theoretical. It's maybe interesting 10 years from now to have a debate at Thanksgiving. It doesn't really help you get through this moment. And so there's a somewhat hard, tough practicality that may be required right now and has to be balanced with a tenderness, a caring, and a self-love so that you're not beating yourself up in that toughness. Mm-hmm. The balance between pragmatism and self-care, I think, is going to be an important one and a tough one right now. So if you're coming out of college into a quasi-frozen job ecosystem, your first job, I would argue, is to accept where you are. Mm. And that can be really hard. I mean, it's there's going to, of course, be this voice being like, yeah, but I don't want to deal with this. Why me?
Right.
Why am I dealing with this shit?
Right.
This is so unfair. And I agree. And it won't matter. And that's the self-care part. You're going to have to process that feeling. You're going to have to find a way to like listen to it, acknowledge it, validate it, and let it go, let it dissolve. Or if you can't do that, find a way to move on despite it. And then you may have to lean more into this sort of when the going gets tough, the tough gets going kind of attitude. I also, there's so many different types of people out there. I can't really tell each and every one what their version of this is going to be.
Sure.
Yeah. But get yourself, step one, get yourself to a place where you have a readiness to do some hard work and some searching. And then the second thing I would say is recognize that when you're at the beginning of your career, what we hire you on is your potential.
Yep.
When you're later on in your career, what we tend to hire you on is how you did or did not actualize that potential. So we look at your resume,
right,
and we look at what you actually did or didn't do. We don't believe you if you say I have potential, because we say, yeah, but your resume doesn't show that.
Yeah.
Stuff. I know, but
yeah,
like, you've been in the same job for 10 years and now you want to be two levels above. I don't actually see data that shows me that that's a good idea for me to do that. But at the beginning, I don't have any data on you. Yes. There are people that will look at data like the school you went to, the GPA you got, and your extracurriculars and things like that. But fundamentally, for an entry-level job, I'm going to look at you, I'm going to feel you out, and I'm going to think like, yeah, I think Hong has some like interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And that's about presentation more than it is about content. And so I would encourage you to really think about who you are and how you can show up in a way that makes somebody get excited about you. And again, let the greater context fall away.
Right.
And then the third thing I'll say, and this will be the final thing I'll pause here, is get ready for a grind. This is going to be a grind. It is not your fault, but it is what you have to deal with. It's potentially going to be one of or the biggest grinds any new entrant into the job market ever experience. That's what you got on your hands.
Yeah.
And it's not an impossible task. It's not, if you want to talk specifics about how you should be thinking about that first job, I actually don't know. I don't know how much it matters. If you can get a job right now as a, janitor, even though you have aspirations to be a CTO, if that's the only job available, we're going to understand. Trust me, like the whole world's going to look that way.
Yeah.
Tend to yourself, tend to your own reality, and get ready to work your face off. And let that be enough. Don't worry about trying to fix the entire economy. That'll take care of itself in time. And I'll pause there.
Yeah, no, this is good. All good points. A couple things I can think of is like, number one, as a CEO, my job is very akin to a janitor. So there's no judgment there.
No. It's more about aspiration, not about better or worse.
Number two is like, I remember my first job because it was really freaking hard. I got rejected by every firm up and down Wall Street. And again, this is a privileged position, but I remember getting that job and I ended up at this amazing firm. I still remember the whole recruiting process. I remember the people I interviewed with, and that actually set the tone for a lot of the interview or the processes and the recruiting that I do today. And my actual first job offer was in the bike industry. And it was so little, and I wanted that job so bad. I was like, that was my dream job. I can probably say what it is now. It's $22,000 a year. And I was like, I can't even afford, a bedroom. Like, a bedroom in New York City is like a split out like closet.
Yeah.
I couldn't even afford that on $22,000 a year. So I turned down that job and I took the job at D.E. Shaw. But yeah, the good news is I think you're right. I don't think your first job determines your career. And especially at this time, it's kind of get what you can get. I don't think people have the same idea that when I took my first job, I was going to be there for 10, 20 years. Right? Now it's like,
totally.
You take what you can, you might be there for a year or two. And then when hopefully the economy recovers or the job market recovers, you can find more opportunities. The other great thing you said is about for new grads, we hire based on potential and not pedigree necessarily, or experience, I guess. A question that comes up though is like, I've been talking to a lot of, I'd recruit for startups. I do mostly tech, mostly engineering, some design, some high level stuff, some exec stuff. But I've been talking to a lot of people who are coming out of these, let's call them code camps, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. It's hard to evaluate, right? For me personally, like I don't look at them the same as coming out of like a CS program out of like Stanford or mm-hmm. you know, MIT or something like that. And again, that's part of that pedigree experience.
Sure.
How do you recommend people who want to enter into startups or into tech and don't actually have kind of a tech background? Because, you know, back in the good times, we would hire anybody and everybody. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, there is some golden era in my mind when I remember a lot of executives at startups had like liberal arts degrees. And so do I. You know, like I was a poetry mm-hmm. major, and, you know, Chad Dickerson, I think, is an English major. And yeah. There's just people I think of who, you know, they found their way here. They sort of fell. We all kind of fell into this thing at some point. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's as true anymore. I don't want to sound like a one trick pony, but that persistence, like get ready for a grind advice, I think holds equally true here. I remember I once gave this talk on this exact topic at General Assembly when they were young, when mm-hmm. it was still like an in-person, class-based thing solely. And I don't even think there were co-working space yet, maybe. And there was one woman in this class, it was about how to make career transitions within tech, so a slightly different topic, who really wanted to become a venture capitalist. And she was, of everyone in the class, she was taking the most notes, and she hammered me with, she just pounded my inbox for like a month after with follow-up questions. She was happy to answer, by the way, but like she was so invested in making this happen.
Yeah.
And she did. It took her a year. I mean, I kept track of her, and it took her a little over a year to
She's a VC. Find an,
yeah. But it took a lot of persistence. It took a lot of carry through. It took a lot of rejection. And along the way, and this is kind of the key thing I want to say here, you could tell her eyes and her ears were open. Mm-hmm. Like she was willing to listen and learn. And along the way, nothing she heard or saw changed her desire to get where she wanted to go, but it did inform it and what the path looked like and how you get there. Yeah. So sometimes what happens is when people go down that path with eyes and ears open, they actually hear something or learn something where they realize, oh, I don't actually want this. You know, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, but I'm just finished my first year of law school and I hated every moment of it. Maybe the data shows me that what I want isn't what I thought I wanted. Cool. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing result, especially when you're young and early in your career. But if you know, like, okay, I want to become a programmer. This is one of the ways that I want to shape my life. I want this to be my vocation. I want my life to be shaped. And you can get more specific. I want to work remote from Montana, you know, making at least X number of dollars a year while I raise Scottish sheepdogs, and I don't want to work more than 50 hours a week. Ultimately, that's where I want to get. And I'm 23 or I'm 40 and I'm coming from, you know, an accounting job and I want to make this transition. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to hold that steady, just hold that vision and acknowledge that not everything comes easy. And you don't know yet whether you can get it right now or not, but you can get it. If you hold on to it, you can get it. You may or may not have sort of a difficult road there. I have another friend who wanted to be a doctor and is really bad at standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she's a doctor now. It took her 7 years to pass the test. And to the point where the rest of us were really actually, even I was starting to look at her being like, God, this is starting to look like someone just, I don't know if you remember the scene in Raging Bull, if you've ever seen that movie, there's this incredibly painful scene where he's just punching a wall.
Yeah.
And you just have this feeling of like, God, just stop. Like, stop. You're hurting yourself. Just stop. It's time to stop. And there was this feeling of like, it's time to stop. And then like she got through, she got her thing, and she's a practicing doctor. So, you know, there's a bit of this that's just wanting it enough. There's a bit of this that's wanting the right thing. I mean, there are things that we don't have high aptitude towards. And I think people have different philosophies on whether or not you can develop aptitude. I think it's a blend. Yes, you can. And I will never be a great mathematician. That is not a skill of mine. Yeah. I'm not detail oriented. The amount of, unless for some reason becoming detail oriented was the singular most important thing in my life, it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. So some blend of know thyself and make sure you're pointing yourself at the right thing for you. and then just keep walking towards it and have some faith that you're eventually going to get there. Like, someone's going to cut you a break. Someone's going to give you a chance. Some opening is going to come through. The economy won't be like this forever.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean your first step on your path is the step into the end point. That path might be years long. So if you're a someone who just came out of a code camp, to bring it back, because I know you've asked to keep this tactical. I'm going to try and honor that. And you find that you can't get a job right now because there are too many people that are, you know, better on paper than you that just got laid off. It's probably a common experience right now.
Yeah, it is.
There are also a bunch of founders right now trying to get something off the ground that can't afford to pay anybody anything, but you could do it for free and start building your resume that way. There are side projects you could do that still establish your credibility that will make you better. There are mentors you could seek out that become network relationships and actual teachers and friends of yours that will start to build one of the other core components of your career, which is the people that know that you know how to do stuff.
Yeah.
Get creative. Keep, you know, moving forward. To, I don't know why I'm referencing so many movies today, but what about Bob? Baby steps?
Yeah.
But, you know, take the biggest step available to you, which might be a very tiny step, but keep moving somewhere.
If you send out 100 resumes and you're not getting any responses, like, it's clear your resume doesn't work. If you're sending out 10 and you're getting calls, you know, seven out of 10 times, great. But if you can't get past that first call, you're doing something wrong there. So can you walk us through, like, how, as a, you know, a HR person or a people person on the inside, how do you evaluate a resume? Because I think most people know by now that I look at a resume for like 10 seconds, right? I mean, that sucks. Yeah. Like, you spend all this time and you do all the formatting and you use these templates, and then, like, you barely get a consideration, really.
Yes. Okay. A few things pop to mind right away. I'm going to skip ahead and answer maybe like the next thing, because I just don't want to lose this thing. But if you do get to talk to this recruiter, one thing I would encourage you to do is, again, like, eyes open, ears open. What type of recruiter are you talking to? Because there are people that are very process driven and they're just looking for keywords and canned answers. And you're going to need to identify that person. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that are more dimensional in what they're looking for and how flexible they are and how much they want to engage with you. Right. Those canned recruiters, I would argue, are pretty dangerous and not that useful, but they are common. They very are prevalent. So we can maybe circle back to that, but it's true. I mean, if you are going through, so what is a day in the life of your average, like, mid-level recruiter look like? And I'm talking startup context. I can't speak to things I don't know about. You wake up, you have your coffee, whatever, come into work, you sit down. And there are way too many. If you're in a company with any, if you're in a company with any kind of branded market, then there are way too many resumes sitting in front of your busy ass schedule, because you still have to spend the entire day doing a series of 30-minute screening calls, and that's all you get to decide whether or not this person is going to be sent forward. And whether we like it or not, at that level, most of the time, what we're thinking about is this candidate going to make me look credible or not credible?
Yeah.
And so if I'm afraid that sending you to the CTO is going to damage my credibility with the CTO, it makes me way less likely. I might do it anyway. If I have a strong backbone, I might say, hey, I know you think this kind of candidate isn't worthwhile, but I want you to take a look anyway. I think that, you know, Hong really has something. Please be open-minded. And there's stuff you can't control. We have a healthy relationship, unhealthy relationship. I might respect it. I might not, all that stuff. Forget all that. Right. You can't control it anyway. But but know that I'm looking at you wondering whether or not you look credible. And what that means is, in a resume screen, do you look like what I've been asked to look for? And the best tool I can think of, and actually, Hong, I would love to hear if you have a different or other answer. I'd be really genuinely curious about this. Mm-hmm. The best tool I can think of is the simplest one. It's just look at the job description. A lot of them aren't written that well, but look for what they seem to really care about or be poking at.
Yeah.
Now, there's stuff you can't control. They may not know what they want, and so they may have written the wrong job description. There's all kinds of stuff that you're...
It
happens a lot. Now, if you're in a technical role, look specifically to the technical skills. But let's say you're a manager. They're going to say, has managed teams of a certain size.
Yep.
If you've done that, make sure it's in your resume. And actually, here's another really tactical, time-consuming, going back to the grind, but important point. Rewrite your resume for every application. And yeah. Here's why. If you seem to read the job description and they're saying one of the most important things is X, and you did X, but it was 5 years ago, then you're going to want to write a functional resume. And you're going to want to put chronology at the bottom so that the first thing I see is the relevant stuff. Mm-hmm. But then the next company, that's not going to be the way you want to present yourself.
Yeah.
That's why this is a grind, because you have to treat every single one of these so carefully, and 99% of them are going to never even get back to you.
Yeah.
It's wildly unfair, super frustrating, and it's the thing that most people are going to have to deal with right now. If you can at all do it, do not send your resume. If you can at all do it, network your way in and try not to get thrown to HR. Because we're even wonderful recruiters and wonderful HR people. I am not down on my people, but we can only say no to you. We can never say yes to you. It's not our job. We don't generally have that authority. Like, you know, maybe like when I was at BetaWorks, I could effectively say we're hiring this founder. That's not normal. Normally, you can say I'm screening you out. I don't think you're going to make me look credible. Let's be more fair. I don't think you're going to be a good fit for what we need in this role. And I've cut you out, and that's it. You're just shut out. But if you can start away from me and build some rapport, and it doesn't have to be the person in charge, by the way. Like when I got my job at Etsy, here, let me brag a little bit. But hopefully this is a story that will make my point. So you said you've been through three of these, or this is your third one. It's my second. So, you know, I was... When back in the Gravity days, when we first knew each other, you know, I was a headhunter in San Francisco, yeah. 2008, 2009, the, you know, housing mishigas had happened. And all of a sudden, I'm working my face off just to make rent. And I had cheap rent. I paid $6.75 when I lived in San Francisco.
Ooh, wow.
I know. It was one of the cheapest rents of anybody then. It probably doesn't even exist now. It was a decent place. So my overhead was low enough. I was able to hack it for a while, but eventually I decided to just quit and go travel for a year because I really wanted to. And I figured I was never going to have less opportunity cost. That was my excuse anyway, to let myself go do it. So I bailed. Yeah. I went to Central America, Southeast Asia. And in Laos, I saw this job at Etsy that was at the time, like my dream job. Mm-hmm. It was just sort of the product of the business that I was most enamored with. And to this day, still one of my favorite companies tech ever created. And so I reached out to a friend of mine who was very well networked, asked if he knew anyone that worked there because this dream job had come up, knowing I was never going to get the job, by the way. I was in Laos. This was just so that I could maybe meet somebody so that when I got back 6-8 months later, I would have someone to reach out to. And that maybe sort of signals the kind of networking thinking I'm talking about. So I get introduced to this guy. I won't use his name just because I have no idea if he wants to be mentioned on a podcast or not. But he was super nice and he was super helpful. And I sent him a list. I mean, I guess I took all my own advice. I sent him a list of all these questions. What's the culture like? What do they value there? What kind of person, you know, would be happy there? What kind of person would be miserable there? I had his permission to ask him these questions. He gave me these really thoughtful answers. And I said, wow, like I'm in, you know, the wrong continent, but if there's any way I could, you know, apply for that job, I would love to. And he just forwarded me to the COO. And then the COO met me over what would have been Skype then. Mm-hmm. And then I met the CTO. And then I met I briefly met Rob then. And I met some of the really early, I had like 8 Skype interviews. And 8 Skype interviews later, I had a job offer. I had a job offer having left the country during the worst economic crisis of my life until now. What could have been without COVID, like the worst moment I was ever going to experience. And mm-hmm. I got to come back employed. And I came back to San Francisco, packed up my stuff and moved it to New York. And you know, I was working. I acknowledge the amount of privilege and luck. And like, there's just some unfair advantages that were already built in to make that possible. But but it is possible. It's possible for anyone. If anyone's really on their hustle with this, you know, they can get there. I feel like I tangent it a little bit, which I tend to do, but coming back to this notion of how you can look at getting into the company, what you want to do last is talk to HR. What you want to do first is try and create some rapport, some connection with someone in the company, someone who's going to be an advocate for you, someone who's going to walk your resume over to HR and say, hey, I just think this guy's really cool. Can we take a look at it?
obviously networking is really, really, unfortunately, the only way to get an early stage startup job. And people don't like to say that because we want it to be a meritocracy. We want to tell people everybody has a fair shot. The reality is like probably, I used to say 2/3 of the hires that I do are through referrals. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually closer to like 90%. So
yeah,
that's the reality. If you don't get that warm intro, like you don't really, you're starting like way behind.
Yeah. I mean, we describe it or I hear it described a lot as a great meritocracy, but it's not accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. Like what we're actually describing is, I don't want to be too negative on it, but it's some amount of, you know, a who's who list that kind of moves around mm-hmm. company to company. And that's true way down into the stack of an organization. Like, sure, it's true when you hire a new CMO, but it's also true when you hire a new, you know, superstar engineer within your local market. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, in a normal economy, all I would say, if someone said you get like two sentences to try and talk to someone at the beginning of their career and tell them something useful, all I would say is your entire career is going to be dictated by what you know how to do and who knows that you know how to do it.
Yeah.
And you're going to need both if you have ambition. Yeah. If you don't, then you'll have an easier time. You may have a more pleasant life too, because you're going to be striving for less disgruntlement. But what do you know how to do is important. I think a lot of young people skip that step and just go to like, I want people to know that I know how to do this, but I actually don't have the mastery yet. Mm-hmm. And the other one is there are people that are masterful, but very few people know it.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I also think is a second category of like, you know, uncut gems or diamonds in the rough. People that
another movie reference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I guess I know where my head's at today. that like, you know, are recruiting gold because they're a little bit less fought over. Yeah. But those are both important things to think about. That doesn't stop being true now. And so either, I mean, just to add one more thing, you could potentially make the choice to say, I don't believe, if you can, you know, financially hold, I don't believe it's likely that I'll be able to get the job I want for the next 4 to 6 months. But let me shift this to how do I prepare for that moment? When that job emerges, how am I more ready than everybody else? Mm-hmm. Who have I met? What have I learned? What thoughts have I thought? What beliefs have I changed, et cetera?
Yeah.
That won't work for everybody. Not everyone can hold that long. But if you can, that going back to that notion that like we're all on this journey somewhere, those are still important steps. There's still a lot you can do to take yourself ultimately where you want to go.
It's been a really rough time and all we're trying to do is help.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you putting that out there. And you're also on Twitter, you know, whatever, or you know, if you want to pitch your website, please let people know.
I don't have a website. Okay. Now that I have all this time on my hands, I'll probably create one. But all my business, I'm sure this is true for you, has always been inbound referrals. So I've just never needed to brand myself that way.
That's right.
But I'm at Basker on Twitter. I'm Jonathan Basker on Instagram. Use the, you know, pick your poison. I'm here if you want to talk. And just know that you won't be talking into a vacuum. I will absolutely, you know, be there to respond and hang out however you need that to look.
Yeah. And we'll get through this together.
That's right. We will get through this together. You know, there's a curse. May you live it to see interesting times. And then that just goes through my head a lot. Like these are interesting times. This is part of what it is to live in the world. As I said, is like sometimes things go wrong or don't go as right as we want.
Yeah.
And if you need to curl up into a ball and shudder and wail and collapse right now, go for it. That's a reasonable response. Don't feel shame in that.
Yeah.
Do it. And if you find yourself getting stuck there and unable to uncurl and it's starting to harm your life, reach out to someone for help. There's no shame in that. And if you find yourself looking at this moment and feeling galvanized and stronger and ready to lead and support those around you, there's no shame in that, even though other people aren't able to do it right now. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to have their response to this. We're all going to do our best. None of us are going to navigate it perfectly.
Yeah.
The more we can help carry each other through it, the more this becomes not just a moment that we get through, but something that really changes who we are and how we show up for each other. That's my big hope.